Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Our wonderful Dr. Nina Sachs joins us today to respond to your questions and comments on gastroenterology. She comes to us from Albany Gastroenterology Consultants in Albany. Dr. Sachs received her medical degree from the University of Rochester School of Medicine and completed her internal medicine internship and residency at Strong Memorial Hospital. Dr. Sachs completed her gastroenterology fellowship at Albany Medical College as a board member of St. Peter's Surgery and Endoscopy Center. She is, of all things, known as the longtime host of our health show. Dr. Nina Sachs, thanks for being here to join today's conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Let me say one thing to all of you. Don't fool around with me now, because by the end of the show, every single phone, and there are only five of them, are going to be lit up. Get online now, and don't yell at me later, okay? Are we all clear on that? 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Ellen in Ashland, New York, for the great Nina Sachs. Okay, Ellen, you're up.
Oh, thank you for this opportunity. I hope you can answer me. I have been diagnosed with an hiatal hernia. I've also had H. pylori, which was eradicated. I was told I was negative. And all my adult life, I have been bothered by burping in the middle of the night. I use a wedge pillow to sleep on, and it has improved things. I do not seem to have GERD, although I'm told I do have it, because I never, ever have heartburn. Okay. So can I blame my problems on hiatal hernia, and what else could I do to improve my sleep?
Okay, so when you belch just at night, do you have any belching after meals, or is it just really
at
night?
Not during the day, never.
Okay. There are things that could be causing this other than reflux. And, you know, reflux is when stomach acid or stomach contents refluxes up into the esophagus. And sometimes people take anti-acid medication to relieve this. But what you're talking about more is belching of air, and that could be something called aerophagia or air swallowing, and particularly when you only have it at night. So you want to be more conscious of not eating late at night, not drinking a lot of liquids late at night so that your stomach is more empty, okay? And sometimes what it may be happening with you is you may be air swallowing or mouth breathing at night, and so you're swallowing a lot of air, and then you wake up and you have a lot of air to pass or belching. Mm-hmm. So it may be a behavior that you could change a little bit rather than simply GERD or reflux. Just because you have a hiatal hernia, which means part of the stomach rising up into the chest, doesn't mean it's necessarily acid reflux that's causing your problem. Mm-hmm. It may be a little bit more complex than that. Have you seen a gastroenterologist maybe to discuss it?
I believe I was to your group, Dr. Notice, for several times. I've been in endoscopy both ends.
Okay, well, listen, try this, and then you can always come back and see him again. But try this. Try just being aware of how you're breathing, okay? If you're doing a lot of mouth breathing, maybe you want to sleep on your side instead. Because the wedge pillow may not help you in this situation. You know, you may bend more, and then you're swallowing more air, and it's not passing down. Mm-hmm. So you may want to give that up. Try not to eat or drink anything after 7 o'clock at night.
Ellen, I don't want to get in on this, but have you considered seeing a sleep expert for CPAP?
No, yeah. No, because if I didn't have the burping, I would sleep like a baby.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right, so try some of the things I talked about. And also, at night before you go to bed, chew 2 Gaviscon tablets. That's algidic acid.
Yes, yes. Yeah, they don't seem to help me, but I will try it anyway.
Try it, or some Pepcid, something like that, at night, okay? And see
Pepcid.
If that doesn't help you. And think about air swallowing and behavioral things, okay?
Ellen,
all right,
thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ellen.
Bye.
Okay, we got 2 free phones. They're going fast. Sarah from Queensbury, you're on.
Hello, doctor. Thank you for taking my call, Ellen.
Sure.
When I feel like I have to have a bowel movement, my whole body breaks out into a body sweat. My face, my hair gets soaking wet, and it's painful when I do it. And I've had the cancer tests, and everybody says they don't find anything. So that doesn't stop me from breaking out into a sweat when I have to make a bowel movement, though.
Let me ask you, when you said the cancer test, you've had colonoscopy? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And everything was fine?
Everything was fine.
Okay. Sometimes what happens, it's called a vasovagal reflex. Sometimes when your rectum or colon is full of stool before a bowel movement, some people do get sweaty. They get almost like they're going to pass out. And, you know what may help that is if the stools are very soft and easy to pass, that you're not straining, you might add some Metamucil or Citracel to your regimen, some prunes or dates, something like that. Medjool dates are very good for that. Or some flax or bran. And try to keep things very soft. So when you strain, that's when this happens, okay? And you know what? You're not alone. It happens to other people.
Okay, and sometimes, so the sweat breaks out before I've even made
it. Yeah, you have that feeling you have to go. So if things are very soft, I think that it wouldn't take it away completely, but it may help quite a bit. You may just have a very sensitive vagal nerve. You know, some people, you know how some people, they get blood drawn and they pass out, and, you know, they're very sensitive, and that may be part of what's going on with you, a very sensitive gastrocolic reflex. So if you keep things soft, that may help. And also, if this were to happen, you know, put your head down, you know, lie down, put your head down if it's available to you, and that will make the situation better sooner.
I feel better already.
Sarah, you're terrific. Thanks for calling, Sarah.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. That leaves a couple of phones open, and now's the time because you won't get in later. Let's go to Sandra in Clifton Park. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Sandra, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You have to turn your radio off and listen to us over the phone. Otherwise, there's a delay. That's the problem.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. What's your problem?
My problem is that, well, I'm getting a little bit better, but I was experiencing, like, brain fog and just fatigue and just not feeling good. And I watched the Dr. Oz show, and they had this special on bacteria in the intestines, and you're supposed to spit in a glass that it's fibrous and goes into fibers and stuff like that and floats on the top. It's like a yeast infection in your gut, and I did that test, and that's exactly what happened, exactly what they said was going to happen, and I've been taking probiotics, and it's helped some, but I'm wondering what else I can do because I don't feel like it's still 100% gone.
What test? I don't understand. What test did you have done? Stool testing or for yeast?
No, it was basically just taking a glass of water first thing in the morning, and you spit in it. And if your spit floats on the top and gives off these, like, long fibers, it's a sign that you have a yeast infection, but it's in your gut.
Okay.
That it's very often not diagnosed. And I had all of the other symptoms that she described.
Okay, Sandra, you got to wait now and let Dr. Sachs answer your question, okay?
Okay?
Here you go.
Okay, so yeast in the GI tract. It's kind of a controversial area, all right? And there are medications that you could take to eradicate yeast if that's present. Sometimes people will have actual stool testing to see if there is yeast in the stool. Probiotics can be helpful. But the other thing that can be helpful is a yeast-free diet. I don't know if you've started that, which is a low-sugar diet or no sugar, because yeast production is more rampant if there's sugar in the diet. So lactose, which is milk sugar, regular sugar, high fructose corn syrup, things like sodas, those all need to be eliminated as well. There's a diet called a FODMAP diet, which can help, FODMAP. You may want to look that up online and talk to your doctor about a diet like that. It just may be that you're kind of on the right track with the probiotics, but you haven't changed your diet enough to see a difference, or it may be that something else is going on. So I think you should not just rely on Dr. Oz, because every person is an individual. You should talk to your doctor, okay, and think about your diet.
Okay, Sandra?
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Bye-bye.
Nina, I wanted to ask you a real fast question. We hear a lot about yeast in women. Is there ever yeast in men?
Well, if you're on antibiotics, people are on, you can get a yeast super infection or yeast in the gut. So, but I'm not sure in all people if yeast is really the answer.
I see. I get you.
I'm thinking that even in for this patient, it may be more her diet to blame and other things, or there may be something else going on.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't attribute everything to yeast unless you've really done a thorough workup.
You have to go to the doctor to find that
out.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We will be right back. I'm talking about seconds. You want to get in on it, do it now. 1-800-348-2551.
Support comes from Premier Medical Group of the Hudson Valley, gastroenterology and urology specialists with offices in Dutchess, Ulster, and Orange counties. PremierMedicalHV.com. Wiawaka, Lake George, New York, an enrichment and revitalization historic lakefront retreat created by and for women since 1903. WIAWAKA.org for events. American Meditation Institute, Averill Park, New York, offering meditation classes for beginners working to reduce stress and enhance their health. AmericanMeditation.org. Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or VisionXLEyeCare.com. And Don Muller Gallery, Northampton, Massachusetts, specializing in jewelry, custom designs, handcrafted glass, and gifts by American artists since 1978. Facebook and DonMullerGallery.com.
And here we are. We're on the air again. That's
right.
Good. I think I may have messed up in the beginning, so I'm going to do it again. Support for Medical Monday comes from the Hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley, health-quest.org for locations. And I want to remind everybody, if you want to get us, you can email us right now at WAMs at voxpop@wamc.org. That's voxpop@wamc.org. Love to hear from you, and we'll try to get your questions on the air. Let's go to Rose in Albany. Rose, go.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
Hi, I have a question for the doctor.
Sure.
Yeah, I was diagnosed with H. pylori, and it was treated. The doctor said now I am free of it, but I have this constant belching, really, 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 really gross, and it's painful. If I don't belch, and it happens a lot, if I don't belch, I have this terrible pain in my stomach, and if I try to breathe, it hurts. And I find myself constantly have to drink something warm or something hot. Even water that I drink will make me feel really, really bad. So I'm having this terrible problem. I did the colonoscopy and the endoscopy, and I was diagnosed with chronic gastritis. So I just wanted to know what was going on the inside, and is there any specific diet that I should follow that could help me? It's really troubling.
Okay.
Okay. I understand. I don't know if you listened to my answer to the first patient's question, but it was very similar to this. What I think is, in addition to perhaps H. pylori, which is the bacteria, you've been treated for that, it's eradicated. Okay. But in addition to acid reflux and reflux that we can get after meals, it sounds to me that you have what's called aerophagia, air swallowing, okay? Loud belching is not really reflux, okay? It is the expulsion through the mouth of swallowed air, and it is very uncomfortable. And most people, they swallow air, they don't even realize it. Sometimes it's because they have breathing difficulties. They have asthma or they have lung disease, and they breathe through their mouth and therefore swallow air that way. I don't know what your body habitus is or what your other medical issues are. But other times it can be from stress. People are stressed. They're swallowing air. They're eating too quickly, drinking liquids too quickly. You shouldn't have any carbonated beverages. So if you talk to your doctor about Aerophagia, air swallowing. Okay.
Okay.
Aeropphagia. Look it up online. Okay. Talk to your doctor. Talk to your gastroenterologist, because there can be some behaviors that you can learn to combat it, not to cure it, but to help. So there is help for that, but you have to be addressing the right issue. Okay?
Thank you, Rose. Right, appreciate
you.
It. Okay. That leaves one free phone. So is aerophagia only burping, or can, to put it mildly, can it come in other forms through the other portals?
Aerophagia means air swallowing, but yes, you can have increased intestinal gas and more flatus, you know. But this really is a behavior that people can, if once they're aware of, they can make modifications.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And that is, let's go to Peter in Albany. All right, Peter, you're on. Go.
Oh, hi, it's Dr. Sachs. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My wife is 47 years old, and she has had a history of gallbladder surgery about 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And since then, she's still having occasional upper, we call it gastric pain, pretty severe. And she notices that when she doesn't eat, she starts getting a little bit more painful. She's had upper endoscopy twice. The last time they did biopsy, they found the endoscopies were negative on examination, but when they did a biopsy, it came back as chronic severe gastritis. She's concerned because her father passed away from gastric cancer.
Okay. But she's had two endoscopies that did not show cancer. Is that correct?
Correct.
And she did not have bacteria, H. pylori bacteria.
It's negative, yes.
Okay.
That one's negative.
There are... I don't know your wife's history specifically and what she's had, but what I would tell you is sometimes after meals, people can have what's called, it's like an irritable bowel syndrome. It feels like an ulcer, but it's not an ulcer. And I will tell you this, if I look on endoscopy and I don't see any gastritis, but then the pathologist tells me on the biopsy there's gastritis, I don't exactly know what to make of that. Because when you pinch for a biopsy, you're going to create a little bit of inflammation. So I don't take that as seriously as when I see redness or gastritis or ulcer visually, okay? So, I mean, you certainly could treat someone like your wife with anti-acid medication for a while, but sometimes people have different issues. Non-ulcer dyspepsia is what that's called. It's like an irritability of the bowel. That should be addressed perhaps with some changes in diet, smaller meals. Assessment of stomach emptying. Maybe her stomach is slow to empty and that's why she's uncomfortable. So there's other things other than just an endoscopy that should be done, I think, to work her up if they haven't been done. So a gastroenterologist, even a second opinion gastroenterologist, might be a reasonable avenue to pursue.
Could this be like what they call like a biliary leak of some sort or a stone?
Not a leak this late, okay? She had a laparoscopic gallbladder surgery 10 years ago? Some people can have what's called common bile duct stones. You can have stones in the bile duct. And to look at that, there is testing that you can do. There's MRI type of testing. There's endoscopic testing of the bile duct that can be done to rule that out. Oftentimes, to screen for that, I might check someone's blood work and see if their liver tests are normal or whatever at the time of pain, because that might help me to look at that. But there are other tests that can be done to rule that out. An MRI to look at the bile duct is an excellent test looking for common bile duct stones.
I see. So that might be a possibility. Then.
Absolutely. There's other things here I think that could be addressed.
Peter,
how about like the cancer history? Any thoughts on that?
History, you said?
Father passed away
cancer.
From gastric.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you've done endoscopy twice fairly recently, you haven't found that. So I think you have to look at other things as well.
Okay.
Hey, Peter, got to go. Thank you very
Thank
much,
you.
Peter. Appreciate
Ellen.
It. Yeah. Let's go to Jennifer in Springfield, Massachusetts. We'd love to hear from Springfield. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually calling on behalf of my husband, who's been having a lot of gastric issues in the past 2 years, and he's been in and out of tests and endoscopies and colonoscopies and whatnot, and basically been told, we've tested everything and you're fine. He did, in the very first test a couple years ago, they said there might be a slight hiatal hernia, but that was about it. But he's still getting lots of gut discomfort, and one thing he keeps mentioning to me is the size of his bowel movements, and he's concerned about the thinness of the stool. He just doesn't feel like it's regular like it used to be.
Okay, so we have a husband calling for his wife and a wife calling for her husband. So can you tell me, other than the bowel movement size, what kind of discomfort does he have? Is it upper or lower? Is it after meals, not after meals?
It's upper. It's upper. It's more, it's almost near the, I almost want to say like almost towards the diaphragm. You know, it's definitely upper.
So
you know,
way
more.
Upper, and it comes after meals or not related to meals?
It doesn't seem related to meals. I think it sometimes is, but it's kind of an on and off thing all throughout the day and night where he just never quite feels comfortable. And he's always
Does he feel bloated
it.
Or?
I wouldn't say it's bloated. It's more, there's like a gurgling. It's like
okay.
a gurgling.
So
yeah.
What I would say now, if he's had a colonoscopy, an endoscopy, I assume he's had a CAT scan, you know, other imaging,
yes.
and they're not finding anything, then you have to be thinking about a functional bowel disorder, irritable bowel syndrome, again, non-ulcer dyspepsia, a diet-related thing, celiac sprue, gluten
right,
problems,
no celiac.
Lactose intolerance. You may not have celiac, but you could have gluten intolerance. Because remember,
okay.
we talked about sugars. And
yeah.
wheat is not just the gluten protein. Wheat is surrounded by carbohydrates, okay, by sugars.
Yeah.
We remember back to our biochemistry, okay? So you may
yeah.
have sugar intolerance, and that's called gluten intolerance.
Okay.
And these are the kinds of things that you really, how do I say, you've got to find the right doctor who was willing to address these issues. It's
yeah.
not just about a colonoscopy or an endoscopy. It's
right.
really about kind of focusing in what's the diet. Is there stress? Could stress
yeah.
be doing some of this?
Yeah.
Because there's an intimate connection between the brain and the gut. And so when people are under stress, they may feel very uncomfortable in the gut. And it's
yeah.
real. Okay, it's not a psychiatric issue. It's
sure.
a real issue. So there's
sure.
other things that probably need to be addressed.
Yeah.
But you got to find the right person to address them with.
How do you do that, Nina?
Yeah.
Well, I think what you do is you start with the GI you've had, and you
yeah.
give them another opportunity to kind of look at these things.
Mm-hmm.
If that
yeah.
doesn't work out, then you're really looking at an academic center. I don't know where you guys live. You're in Springfield, Mass?
Yeah, Northampton.
Okay.
So we're in an academic area.
Right. So you've seen somebody at the academic medical center, somebody who specializes in irritable bowel syndrome.
Okay.
Leahy
okay.
Clinic. I'm just trying to think of Yale. I mean, you really want, maybe you want somebody with functional bowel disorder expertise. And I'm
okay.
only saying that because I don't know what exactly he's had. I'm only saying it assuming
right.
all of the testing and the imaging and the CAT scans and everything are quote-unquote negative. Then you're really
yeah.
kind of looking at diet and lifestyle changes, and that's harder.
Yeah, and he's tried some of that, which is, you know, on his own. He's tried to pull out the wheat and the sugar and the milk. You know, he's done it. And for longer periods of time, too, he's tried it, and I don't even, it seems to be working. Like, there might be slight
Right,
and
there may be probiotics that he can take or other things.
Yeah.
Or, you know what? Maybe there's something else going on, and you just have to get someone else to look at everything he's had and maybe think about it a little differently.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Because men
Thank
don't
you.
Complain of, you know what I'm saying? They
yeah.
don't typically complain of problems if there isn't something going on. It's just that I don't think
yeah.
we've figured it out yet.
Jennifer,
thank
you for your call. Appreciate it very
okay.
much. Yeah.
Thanks.
Let's go to Estelle in Clifton Park. Okay. Estelle, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. I wonder if, Dr. Sachs, you could explain exactly what Barrett's esophagus is and the symptoms that may be associated with it.
Sure. Barrett's esophagus is where the stomach lining, the actual lining of the stomach, creeps up into the esophagus, okay? Because typically the esophagus is lined with the same type of lining as in your on your lip or in your mouth. And Barrett's means that that stomach lining is creeping up into the esophagus. Now, why is that important? It can be associated with acid reflux symptoms, or some people may have no symptoms. But the reason Barrett's esophagus is important is it can, in some cases, very small number, but some cases, go on to esophageal cancer. So if you have Barrett's, first of all, you have to make the diagnosis. It's usually an endoscopic diagnosis where you do a scope, you do biopsies, you see the that the lining has changed in the esophagus, and you look for something called dysplasia. Dysplasia means that some of the cells have changed, and those are the type of patients who really need to be monitored with periodic endoscopies and biopsies to make sure that that dysplasia does not go on to cancer of the esophagus. In addition, many patients with Barrett's also have an associated acid reflux condition. So by treating the acid and also in some cases taking an aspirin, baby aspirin a day, you can hopefully mitigate the Barrett's changes.
See.
Does that help?
Yes, it does. And I thank you very much.
Estelle, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Actually, there are two free phones now for the first time. If you want to get in, this is the time to do it. You know, Carol in Troy. Okay, Carol, you're on.
Hi. In an 80-year-old woman with a variety of conditions, would diarrhea be possibly a result of spending a lot of time horizontal in bed?
That's a tough one. I would say that no, because I think that if people are less active, they may tend more to constipation. But it depends on what you're talking about, diarrhea. Is it actual high volume, lots of stools, or are
no.
you, or is someone just incontinent of stool? In other words, your muscle is weak, and so you leak a little. Okay, so incontinence is a whole different thing. And yes, spending a lot of time in bed, being elderly, you lose that muscle tone down there in the anal sphincter, and yes, you could leak. The other thing is you got to be sure that somebody's done a rectal exam, make sure you don't have a fecal impaction. You know, in other words, a big, I don't want to be too gross, but a big ball of stool there, and then you're leaking around that, okay?
Uh-huh.
So in the elderly, that's something really to be aware of, and your physician should do a rectal exam, okay? So it could be either of those things or something else. You know, I don't know you well. But those were the kind of things I would be thinking about.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Carol, thanks for calling. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. And somebody from my town, Ray from Great Barrington. Okay, Ray, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have two issues that are probably all the same issue. I have Behçet syndrome.
Okay.
I was diagnosed, I'm 66, and I was diagnosed in my mid-20s, I guess.
Okay.
You
probably know more about it than I do all these years, my goodness.
I'm sorry to say that very few people know enough about it to treat it and so on. You have to find the right people.
You're right, because it's a fairly rare diagnosis. Tell me what's troubling.
Yeah, go ahead, Ray.
Okay. Right now, aside from, you know, that it invades every system in your body, but right now my questions for you are I'm having very strong pain in my, I'd call it my lower GI just above and to the left of my navel.
Okay.
Very strong.
Uh-huh.
And I pass really abnormal amounts of gas constantly.
How about diarrhea? Do you have diarrhea?
Well, right now I'm on a fairly, I think it's a small dose, probably 7 milligrams of an opiate painkiller. I don't know what it's called.
Now, Ray and Nina, I'm so sorry. I want to tell you we're sort of up against a break.
Okay.
So, Nina, why don't you take it now?
Okay. So, here's the thing, Ray.
I've had an endoscopy, a colonoscopy, but no barium swallow.
Yeah. What about a CAT scan? Have you had a CAT scan just to make
no.
sure?
No.
Okay. So that's one thing to think about, a three-dimensional X-ray.
Also, by the way, lots and lots of really nauseous for long periods, but I do not vomit. I'm just miserable.
Okay.
So go ahead.
All right. So people with Behçet's can have colitis type.
And what is Behçet's, Nina?
Oh, Behçet's is a autoimmune disease where you get oral ulcers and you get genital ulcers and you get arthritis. It's not lupus, but people know lupus better.
Gotcha.
Okay. But it's you can also get gastrointestinal issues, and that's where we were just talking. You can get colitis type problems.
When you turn red, when the veins
telangiectasias, you get all kinds of skin issues.
Okay, I'm going to have to ask you guys for a favor.
Yeah.
I tried to end it before, but I have to take a break now. Ray, could you stay on the phone for a minute?
I'd love to.
Okay, but then we got a lot of people behind you. Okay.
I hear you.
Okay, go ahead. Take her away, Professor.
Support comes from Middletown Medical with walk-in urgent care centers in Middletown and Ellenville for the treatment of injuries and illness. Minimal wait times, evening and weekend hours. MiddletownMedical.com for insurance providers. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. The 1850 House Inn and Tavern, Rosendale, New York. Newly renovated boutique hotel in the heart of the Hudson Valley. 12 guest rooms with modern amenities, located close to historic landmarks. The1850house.com. And Express Pediatrics Highland. Walk-in urgent care for children open Monday through Friday from 5 p.m. to midnight, weekends noon to midnight. This fall offering flu shots. ExpressPediatrics.com.
And we are on. We're having a great conversation here in the studio. Dr. Nina Sachs, our wonderful, voice of the health show, and just a great lady, as you can all hear. So, Ray, you're on. What do you got?
It's in her hands.
Okay.
I'd just like to know anything she knows about GI and Behçet's, and what can I do about this terrible pain in my stomach.
Ray, I don't want to cut you off, but the problem.
I'm done. I'm waiting.
Okay.
So here's the thing. Pain. I'm not sure what's causing your pain, but if you have not had a CAT scan, three-dimensional X-ray, pancreas, because just because you have Behçet's doesn't mean you don't have cancer or something. Okay.
Right.
So, or you might. All right. So you need to have a CAT scan. You need to talk to your doctor about that. I think in terms of GI issues, diarrhea, colitis, but I think with your nausea, you were saying you're on opiate painkiller.
That prevents the diarrhea.
Right, but it can't.
In the past, I've had chronic diarrhea.
Right, and you can have.
Until I started.
Ray, I got to ask you. I don't want to be rude, really, but I have to move on. So Nina, you want to finish your sentence?
So the only thing I want to say, Ray, your situation is complex, and I'm sure you have good physicians who are following you. I would say that opiate narcotics can cause nausea. We'd have to review all your medicines and try to figure out how to maybe adjust them a little bit differently. But what I would say is get a CAT scan.
Okay. Ray, I got to let you go. Thank you very much for calling.
And I wish I could speak longer with you, but thanks.
Things are what they are. Nina?
Yep.
Thank you. Take good care. Good care.
Bye. Yep.
Okay. Let's go to Maureen in Glens Falls. Maureen, you're on.
Hello.
Hi, Maureen. You're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a question that has bothered me for a long time. I have had intestinal issues all my life since I was a baby and discovered a few years ago that I have celiac disease. I also have a hiatal hernia, and I had Barrett's esophagus, and I was eventually put on Nexium or Prilosec. And I've been taking this for a number of years, but I know that there are other side effects from this. I have a lot of diarrhea, and I'm trying to, be careful of my diet. I don't eat any wheat, but I would really like to get off the Nexium, and I'm wondering if it's possible, considering that I have a hiatal hernia and I had the Barrett's.
Yeah, I think it depends on your symptoms, okay, and what your concerns are regarding the Nexium. There has been some, albeit poor, literature suggesting a possible association between this type of medicine, which is called a proton pump inhibitor, Nexium, Prilosec, Omeprazole, and thinning of the bones, osteopenia. But I will tell you that literature is very poor. When you review, when we as gastroenterologists review that association, we find that the literature is very poor in that regard, and that many people have osteopenia anyway. So it's difficult to know how much of a contribution these medicines play, like Prilosec. So I think it really depends. If you're not having gastrointestinal reflux symptoms and you're just taking it because you have a hernia, that's not enough reason. And the other issue is you might be able to split the difference. Perhaps you could take half the dose of Prilosec, or you could take Prilosec every other day, or you could alternate Prilosec with a weaker antacid medicine such as Zantac or Pepcid, which doesn't have those associations. So I think it's really a matter of talking to your doctor, saying, look, these are my concerns. Do you think I really need this medicine, or could I taper it? Could I try it every other day? I mean, you're already watching your diet, so it sounds like you're doing a lot.
Now, Nina, what about surgical repair of the hiatal hernia?
Well, if someone has Barrett's, you have to be very careful about that, because when you repair that or do a hiatal hernia repair, you may hide some of the Barrett's and you won't be able to biopsy it. So it depends. Everybody's anatomy is different, and you'd want to really speak to your gastroenterologist and thoracic surgeon before, making a plan like that. And if it's just a small hiatal hernia, it may not be the right move. So it's complex, and I would think you really have to kind of hone in on that with your gastroenterologist. Does that help,
Well, yes, it does, but let me just mention that I did try to, take the capsule apart and take a couple of the little grains out over a period of time.
No, that won't. That's not good, because those... The delivery system in those medicines, like Prilosec, is critical. So you don't want to open that, because it will be no good to you. When I talk about tapering it, you could take 20 milligrams instead of 40, or take 20 milligrams every other day. That's tapering. But the delivery system is critical in those. So opening
and you say
it
delivery,
won't...
Delivery system meaning...
Meaning whether it's a capsule or a coated tablet.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Maureen, I'm moving along, and I thank you so much for calling.
Okay. Thank you, Ellen.
Okay. Let's go to Linda in Postenkill. Okay, Linda.
Yes. My question is regarding my 23-year-old daughter who was diagnosed 4 years ago with severe ulcerative colitis. And she's currently on Humira. She's been through all the meds that are available for this disease, and she's really struggling with staying on it. She just was in the hospital at Albany Med 3.5 weeks ago, and she's not doing really well because she also got C. diff while she was there, which super sucks. But anyway,
I didn't hear that.
It's an infection
that you get when you're in the hospital.
That's why we don't like to go to hospitals, right? Okay.
Yeah, right. Tell me about it. Yeah. Anyway, so she's been out of work for 5 weeks. I'm becoming very depressed because of everything that's happened, and not to mention the ulcerative colitis. So my question is, Humira, how dangerous is it long-term, and what are her hopes for?
Okay, so she was on Remicade, I assume, first?
Yeah, she had a severe reaction to that almost 2 years ago in
okay.
August.
So she's had a long history
yeah.
of what we call diffuse, so everywhere, ulcerative colitis, so severe inflammation of the colon.
Yeah, yeah.
She's been on potent medication. She's yeah. been on steroids, I assume. And
yeah.
Now
Not
she
at all.
Is taking a very potent
yeah.
medication, Humira,
yeah.
which is also used for rheumatoid arthritis
yeah.
and other autoimmune
mm-hmm.
diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when it's monitored, can be a very effective drug, was recently FDA approved for ulcerative colitis.
Okay.
It isn't, doesn't work for everyone, but
mm-hmm.
It can be very effective. I think she's 23, you said?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And she's obviously carefully following with her gastroenterologist.
Well, her gastroenterologist just retired. You may know who I'm
I
speaking
I know exactly
of.
Who you're speaking of. But we
yeah.
won't mention it here.
Yeah.
So she
yeah.
had
okay.
she had an expert in inflammatory bowel disease. So
mm-hmm.
she and he did retire. There are
yeah.
others at the same
yeah.
institution.
Well, we're actually coming to your office on September 12th.
Okay.
But I was just curious. I just turned the radio on. I had an hour drive ahead of me. I thought I can't hurt to talk to your office.
Absolutely.
Which is we're not coming to see you, unfortunately. You are unavailable, but we're changing offices because the other doctor retired.
Okay. So, listen, there's
mm-hmm.
things with diet. There's things with other medications that could be added.
Okay.
But Humira is effective. And sometimes Humira has to be given every week. And the other thing
is...
She's
on every week
okay.
with the injection.
And then
she's struggling with anxiety connected to
right.
the whole thing.
Right. And
severe anxiety and depression.
Okay.
I was just going to ask you that. Get
mm-hmm.
her to see, in this, in addition to the
mm-hmm.
good gastroenterologist, which you're going to have, okay?
Yeah.
Get
uh-huh.
her to see a therapist who specializes in how we relate to chronic illness, okay?
Okay.
That's going to be very important because even with ulcerative colitis, you know, surgery may be an option down the road
oh,
if things don't work
down
out.
That road twice,
yeah.
Where they almost took it.
But
you know,
see what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
so whatever
mm-hmm.
happens,
yeah.
the way we react to it is going to be critical. She's going
yeah.
to need some help. So try to
you
get
have recommendations
her...
for that type of therapist? Because I've been looking and I just don't know where to begin.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of names. I mean, if there's some kind of recommendation that you could, if I called your office, they could give me.
What you want to do, I know what you could do. You
okay.
could, when you see the gastroenterologist, you
okay.
could ask, who do you recommend? Who do you use? We all have our favorites. And they will
okay.
hook you up. Okay.
Okay.
And don't hesitate to do that.
And Linda, again, my apologies.
No, that's fine. I got the answers.
Okay,
and you
great.
Know what else, Linda? She can talk to other young women who've had this. Okay.
Other support groups.
Yes. And
yeah.
the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation is a great resource. Okay.
Okay.
They have lists also.
Okay.
And support groups for young women who have this. So
okay.
really get involved with them.
All right.
Thank
All
you.
Right, I will
thank you,
do
Linda.
That. Thank you so much.
And thank
you're
you,
welcome.
Dr. Sachs.
Good luck.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
And we'll go to Dee in New Jersey. Okay, Dee, you're on.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I had a lap band procedure 7 years ago. It was quite successful. I lost 135 pounds
yes,
over 2 years.
Yes, all right.
And, you know, I have a wonderful lifestyle now, and I'm just, you know, great. However, I experience if I eat or drink right before I retire, or even a couple hours before I retire, I wake up coughing. And from time to time, I regurgitate.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it wakes me up in my sleep. Sometimes I find it on my pillow. And besides the mechanical issues, I was wondering, is this a precursor for something like Barrett's cell in my esophagus? Or, you know, are there long-range complications that I'm not aware of that this could be causing?
Well, I would say that it probably is mechanical, okay? So when you have a lap band or any procedure for obesity that decreases the stomach size, you will have a mechanical tendency to reflux. You can imagine that, okay? So because your stomach is smaller, Okay, so where is are things going to go? Either up into the esophagus or onward down into the small intestine, okay? So if you're recumbent, particularly at night or after meals, you may have more of a tendency to reflux, okay? Will that predispose you to Barrett's? No one could really say. I mean, I suppose it's possible, just like anyone who has acid reflux, but you would be no more at risk than anyone who has acid reflux for any other condition. I think, though, that what you may want to do is talk to your gastroenterologist and maybe have an endoscopy, if you haven't, where they could look at your esophagus and make sure there's nothing unusual related to the mechanics of your lap band procedure that may help them to help you a little bit better.
My last one was negative.
Good. Okay, so you're on the right track. But mechanical factors are usually at fault here, particularly since they started after the lap band. But congratulations on maintaining your weight loss.
Dee, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Jane in Clinton Corners. Jane, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking the call. I was wondering if it's necessary to go to the doctor for pinworms, or can pinworms be treated with Pinex, which is the over-the-counter medication.
I would say that you could try that, but typically you probably want to have that actually diagnosed, you know, so you're sure. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So I think you should, because there are other treatments as well. You could try a little over-the-counter, see if you feel better, but I would say typically people need to be, it needs to be addressed and diagnosed.
Okay, so very quickly, Nina, what is a pinworm?
just what it's a... It's a cause of perianal itching, and usually a lot of times in children, school-age children. Mm-hmm.
But is it a worm?
It's a worm. It's tiny. It's easily treated.
Where do you get it? Get in the garden?
From other kids, fecal oral transport,
I gotcha.
Kind of thing.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Jane.
Is it hard to get rid of?
No. It's easily treatable. That's why I'm saying get the diagnosis. You know, don't keep it. Like, is it a question or is it or isn't it? Try to pin it down, quote unquote. I didn't mean to.
No pun intended.
No
Thank
pun
you.
Intended. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Okay, Patricia, you're on, but I got to tell you, we have very little time left, so you got to make it quick.
Yes, I had an elderly aunt in Boston. I just want to pass something on. I had an elderly aunt in Boston who was diabetic and had some intestinal problems. She developed diarrhea, and they gave her all kinds of tests, and couldn't find it, and I brought it to the nursing home here in the Berkshires, and I was reading the back of her sugarless candy package one day.
Oh, absolutely. Sorbitol, mannitol, absolutely.
Yes, and it said it has a laxative effect, so I took her off of the candies, and the diarrhea disappeared.
Can I tell you something? I see patients all the time with gas, bloating, diarrhea, and they're chewing diet gum. You know, they're chewing gum. Any sugarless candy, gum, any Splenda, which is sucralose, anything with an os on the end or an ol on the end, they act like laxatives, and they're one of the most common cause right now in our very diet conscious society for gas, bloating, and diarrhea. So thank you.
Interesting. Patricia, thank you.
Okay.
Let's go to very quickly Joe, because Patricia was short. We have just a second. What do you got? Joe
in Pittsfield?
Yeah, but go ahead very quickly.
Yeah. I'm recently diagnosed with an inguinal hernia. I'm getting conflicted advice from healthcare professionals or my friends. They say any physical activity before or after surgery should be limited to slow, deliberate, careful movement, no exertion whatsoever. Others say if it hurts, don't do it, no physical restrictions. Where do you stand on this situation?
I think I would do what your doctor told you, what your surgeon told you.
I had it, Joe. I'm all right, I think.
He says, if it hurts, don't do it. So no physical restrictions.
Well, I would do what your operating surgeon says, but I'd be cautious. I really would. You know, you want it to be, you know, they. How do I say? You want this hernia repair to be for life. So if you take a few weeks and you take it a little easier, what's the big deal?
Yeah,
honestly.
Makes
you know,
sense.
You want it. You want to keep that repair in place and functioning and strong. So
thanks a lot, Joe. That's it.
Okay,
and thank
thanks.
You, Nina. Okay. Anyway, I want to apologize to Paul of Stockbridge. She's a doctor, Bay State Medical Center. and has a terrific gastroenterologist. But I'm sorry, Paula, we just haven't got any time to talk more to you. We're out of time, and everyone, I apologize to Paula. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Kimba Lipscomb. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer has been Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.